so much older then. I'm younger than that now.
Welcome into Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton, and coming up today, we've got the last interview with a woman who was truly one of a kind, a 97-year-old fine artist, war resister, environmental activist, therapist, and jailbird. We'll check in with a true icon in road racing, the marathon man himself, a four-time winner of the Boston Marathon, and a member of every road racing Hall of Fame there is. And we've got some closing words of wisdom from a three-time Olympic gold medalist. This is Growing Bolder. Well, as you folks know, Growing Bolder has built a media company by sharing the stories of people that we call OPALs, which is an acronym for Ordinary People Living Extraordinary Lives. And our guest today claims to be ordinary. In fact, she is the subject of a moving documentary that's called Ordinary Life. Whether she is, in fact, ordinary, though, is debatable, because Dot Fisher-Smith is now 97 years old. She's a fine artist, a war resister, an environmental activist. She's a therapist, and she's a jailbird. We'll talk about that coming up. As a great-grandmother, she chained her neck to a logging truck to protest the destruction of ancient forests. In fact, in 2003, at the age of 75, she was pictured on the cover of Earth First magazine, totally nude, in front of a giant slice of an ancient fir tree. She hiked the Himalayas in her late 60s. She rode her bike daily into her 90s. She camped out alone on Mount Shasta in her early 90s. And today, at 97 years old, she continues to use her voice to speak her mind and to encourage all of us to continue living boldly, especially as we age. So let's find out more as we welcome the amazing, one-of-a-kind Dot Fisher-Smith. Dot, how are you doing today?
Oh, my goodness. Mark, I'm blown away by your introduction. I'd like to meet that person.
Well, you know, I've been anxious. I've been anxious to meet you. You are indeed a true, amazing natural resource for all of us. And let's talk about one who has been involved in civil disobedience for decades. As one who speaks about the Gandhian way, if you will, what are your thoughts about what's happening in the U.S. today? I know you've got to be bothered by what you see out there.
Oh, my God, what a question. Whoa, Mark, I have to go slow. That's the only way I can survive, because the world is going so fast. Everything is moving so fast, but nothing is new, really. It's just a faster version and more of what's been going on. I think that's the way in which I survive. You know, the Red Queen in Alice in Wonderland said, I have to go twice as fast to stay in the same place.
Hmm.
And that's kind of how I feel. But this same place has always been here. And back in, you know, 40 years during the American War in Vietnam, when I first did civil disobedience, people thought we were radicals, and we thought they were making concentration camps for us. It felt like the world was going fascist. I mean, it was. All those things that are happening now have been happening for centuries and centuries, if you look back and think about history. So it's all because of the illusion of separation, the illusion that we're different from each other and that there's something to fear. And there isn't, you know. Everyone has more in common than differences. We're all made out of the same stuff.
At 97 years old, Dot, obviously, maybe you have less to lose, but more to say. Do you still have the energy to say it? What's it like being you, living in that body, having the belief system that you do, the history that you have of being disruptive, of being someone who will take a stand? Are you frustrated by being 97 years old? Are you empowered by that?
Very interesting the way you're asking your questions, Mark. I really like it. We could talk for days. We're like two philosophers sitting here. It's fascinating being in this body that has lots to lose. I've been doing Zen practice, you know, meditation practice, which is really just about being present. It's always now, even with everything swirling around me and the whole world the way it is. The fact is, I'm just here in this body, in this moment, practicing staying here and practicing not getting rattled by what's going on in the world and dealing with what comes to me. There's the root teacher of my practice, Dogen Zenji from the 1200s, said to rush around. I mean, I'm putting this in modern words, but to go out chasing the 10,000 things is delusion. To sit still and let the 10,000 things come to you is enlightenment.
We're speaking with Dot Fisher-Smith, and the fact that she's sitting there willing to engage and talk with us. So many 97-year-olds are A, not able to, or B, not willing, or C, don't have the types of things to say. You know, a long time ago, our culture stopped revering our elders, and that's been, you know, something that has hurt all of us because we can't take advantage of their wisdom. And Dot, you said a minute ago, you know, so much to lose. Is it okay if I ask you about losing John, your husband, your beloved life partner for whom you had a celebration of life recently? And I wonder, when you lose the love of your life, do you also lose your love of life, at least for a while? How are you bouncing back from that?
Oh, that word lose. I didn't lose anything. I do. There's no losing and there's no gaining. There's what is. And John was not only my beloved, that's only the one half of it. He was my worthy adversary as well. He was Dr. Jekyll and he was Mr. Hyde. He was a guy who was so rigid and so fixed. He was from wealthy English stock, and he was very proud and very brittle and uptight, you would say. And I was this kind of wild hippie, barefoot nobody. We were teachers for each other. And so there's no losing. He's inside me, and my work now is fascinating, has been.
What are the blessings of growing older, Dot? Because, you know, we're reminded every day about the challenges. We all know what those are. But, you know, what are the blessings of being your age?
I don't know. To be just being alive. Is being alive every day, to wake up in this body and watch it aging. You know, it's kind of like a book, watching a plant. If we could see that we're similar and not take ourselves so seriously, but stay in the present and enjoy watching it. It's, in a way, it's the same thing as to not buy into conventional ideas and to trust yourself, trust your own body. The miracle of it, that I wake up every day and watching my skin get scaly and withered, just like watching a bouquet, a beautiful bunch of flowers in a vase, so fresh and plump, and then gradually coming into their fullness. You know, when I was turned 50, was like, wow, half a century. I didn't buy into the culture's idea of aging, of getting old, any more than I bought into racism, thinking that anybody was better than anybody else, or that any color was better than anything else. I knew, I just instinctively trusted my own inner wisdom, the miracle of breathing in and out. I don't know, it's a blessing to let go. It's a blessing. It's a blessing to be alive in this moment. That covers everything, really.
I love that. You know, and even at 97 years old, Dot, you're still got projects that you're passionate about. And one of those, I know that you're creating a documentary along with some of your other artist friends and producers about a truly horrific experience that you endured back in 1970 at the age of 42. And to make a long story short, because I want to get you to tell us a little bit about this documentary, you were hitchhiking to see a friend. You were picked up by two men in a truck. Eventually, they murdered a couple, and then one of them murdered the other. You managed to stay alive by applying your principles of nonviolence. Tell us about this documentary that's called Outcast at Sanger Lake. Is it going to be finished? And what's the message that you're trying to share through it?
Okay, I'm going to try to be really succinct here. The facts were that they were, you had the first part right, but they were fugitives. And I didn't realize it in my innocence. I didn't think about that. When they picked me up, they had just come south from Baker, where they had killed his cousin and then couldn't leave a witness and killed the wife as well. And they were fugitives, and they were going up to Sanger Lake to try to hide. And so I didn't know that when they picked me up, but the following, they told me they were going to a beautiful little lake and that I could go with them, and they would bring me back the next day because they had to go out for supplies. And so I went along innocently. And then what happened to me the next morning was that one of them came, Larry, came around to where I was camping and told me the whole story, and that he wanted me to help them move their belongings up into the mountain, up into the hills, and took me around to the other side of the lake. And then the other man didn't want me to help, and they got into this terrible argument. And Larry said, if you say another word, I'm going to kill you. And he did. And I witnessed this murder, and the gun was turned on me, and he didn't kill me. And he said, I couldn't kill you. You're too gentle, you're undefended. And I spent the day with him. And the message is that I saw him when he told me the story of his life and what he had been through. And I saw how tragic his life was, and shone my light on him. He had had a horrible life with no parents, abject poverty, reform schools, crime. No one see him or love him. And this was why he killed his cousin, because his cousin told him he was nothing. And I told him he was beautiful because he was So he knew he was so angry that he could kill. And any of us could do that if we had been brought up in that way, if our lives had been that tragic. So to the fact that I could walk in his shoes and that I could see him, that's all anybody wants, is to be seen and to be loved. That's the bottom line. And that's what nonviolence is about, to be harmless, to be undefended, naked and unashamed. And nobody's going to hurt you if you're harmless. If you got nothing, you got nothing to lose.
Well, the documentary needs to be finished, folks. And Dot and her fellow producers have a GoFundMe page. We'll put a link to that if you want to help them get it done, because I think we'd all love to not just see it, but learn from it. You know, Dot, we talked a little bit about this, but I think we all, most of us at least, have an unhealthy fear of death in this country. We don't talk about it. We don't want to think about it. What I know about you would lead me to believe that you do think about it. Am I right? And what do you think about it, given that you, like me, and so many of us know that we've got fewer tomorrows than we do yesterdays?
Well, yes, I've been thinking about it a lot. I've done a lot of work, a lot of practice. I feel like I lived that day on and off in a way. You know, every breath is living and dying. I've done studies and workshops with a woman named Kim Rosen of poetry. Poetry is helpful and saves me all the time. My angel of death has been with me since before I was born. I've been dead a lot longer than I've been alive. In a way, we all have. We come from the cosmos, but not dressed up as particular individuals. But we come into this world, you know, from the dark, and we live in these bodies inside this skin bag of bones, and then we complete the circle. It's like the circle, you know, there's all the songs about it, about the two worlds and the other world and this side and the other side. And, you know, in this form, it's sort of hard to imagine not being here, because I'm here. And when I'm gone, I'll be gone. It's really so simple, right? It's like, yeah, you open, you close. Everything dies. Whatever gets born dies. As Thich Nhat Hanh, my teacher, Thay, one of my many teachers, said, it would be horrible if nothing died. In a way, yeah. We're here for a moment. Just read poetry and you'll get it. Everything says the same thing. Life is but a dream. That's one of them.
So what is the moral of the story? I mean, a question we don't get to ask 97-year-olds often, you know, someone that has leaned into life, someone that has lived boldly, someone that has taken chances, someone that has succeeded and failed. Is there a moral to the story? Is there a takeaway to the experience of life that you've learned that you wish other people knew?
Oh, I think the takeaway is in everything, in everything that every teacher ever said. Don't worry, be happy. That's Meher Baba. The Dalai Lama says, be happy. Read Khalil Gibran. For me, it's go slow. It's be in my physical body. Be in awe. of the wonder of this moment, of that I'm breathing in and out. Use my five senses. This is all there is right now. And trust the process. Trust yourself. My mission, I think everybody's mission, is to be true to themselves. Shakespeare said it. This above all, to thine own self be true. Thou canst not then be false to anyone else. The Buddha way, that is the way of being in this moment and being present and seeing everyone as myself. There's another each person in the world. Everything I see is another version of myself, made up of the same atoms and molecules and whatever else we're made of. Just it's all a cosmic kaleidoscope. And relax and enjoy the ride. Just be here now.
Be here now. I think Ram Dass said that at one time, didn't he?
He said it a million times over and over. So have I.
You know, Dot, thank you so much. You know, from one who places such value in each and every moment, I can't thank you enough for sharing so many of your moments with us. You know, what a true pleasure. You know, folks, she is 97-year-old Dot Fisher-Smith. We will put links to the documentary about her, the documentary that she's working on our webpage and on our social media channels. You know, I think one of the greatest and most valuable resources we all have is the wisdom of our elders. And Dot Fisher-Smith is the epitome of growing bolder, living a life of art and activism, of passion and purpose. Check out the documentary on Dot. It's called An Ordinary Life. It's on Vimeo. It's free. And support her efforts to finish the documentary Outcast at Sanger Lank. It's all about life and death and redemption, an experience that she went through, 55 years ago. Dot Fisher-Smith, thank you again for your time.
Wow. Mark, do I get to talk to you now?
Yeah, let's talk.
You are astounding. You are the best interviewer I have ever. I mean, you've got it. You say my words way better than I do. Because
no.
You're
kind to say you're kind. You've not just made my day, you've made my year. Well, sadly, Dot passed away unexpectedly not long after our interview. She was 97 and a half, and she passed away peacefully at home, surrounded by family and friends. And what a privilege it was to spend some time with her. All right, coming up, four-time Boston Marathon champion and the winner of four consecutive New York City marathons, Bill Rogers. This is Growing Bolder. Stay connected to Growing Bolder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram for our latest stories, reels, and motivational memes. Welcome back to Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. Our next guest is true running royalty, a road race icon, a marathon legend. This is a guy who helped inspire and build a worldwide running community. He's a four-time winner of the Boston Marathon, a four-time consecutive winner of the New York City Marathon, a former Olympian, and a member of just about every road racing Hall of Fame that there is. Now in his late 70s, Bill Rogers still runs daily. He still participates in running events and is an active ambassador for the sport and the community that he's helped build over the past six decades. Bill's celebrating the 50th anniversary of his historic first Boston Marathon win back in 1975. So let's welcome Boston Billy, Bill Rogers. Bill, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, Mark. Thank you for having me on your show. And your words, I am 100% in agreement. And I just, you know, I hope that this show in any way can be found, we can reach more people. Because I think most people never had a chance to kind of find their path forward about living better health-wise, partly because of our system in school sports where you get chosen for a team. You know what I'm saying, Mark?
Sure. Well, you know what? I mean, it's a great point, Bill, and I thank you for bringing it up right off the bat. It's never too late, folks. We see that all the time. I mean, we did a story on a woman who didn't start running until she was 100 just because she thought it was going to be cool to run 100 meters at 100 years old. So it is never too late. Let's talk about your anniversary, if you will. Isn't it amazing how fast it seems that the past 50 years have gone? Doesn't 1975 almost seem like yesterday?
Yeah, you know, I never even really thought about it till it was happening, and the Boston Athletic Association contacted me and one of my teammates in the Greater Boston Track Club, Bob Hall, who was the first wheelchair athlete, really, I think, in the world. And he won Boston in 75 in his wheelchair. And it was one of those standard hospital models. And so we finished the last half mile of Boston together this year. And he's getting more involved in finding ways to work with the Boston Marathon and give back to people who need wheelchairs or crutches, or I forget the name of the organization that he's working with, but he gets bibs from the Boston Marathon. So I think what's going on in our sport is, of course, women came in the 70s and 80s, and the numbers have gone up and up for our sport. And as you mentioned, the aging issue, people, you know, it's all these myths that we have. They're myths, you know, that you can't do this, you can't do that, you shouldn't do this. I think you should do what makes you happy as much as possible, you know, and find the sport or the activity that works in your life. You know what? And what I really believe, Mark, is I like the Olympic cardio sports. These are Olympic sports, but you don't have to be an Olympian. This is rowing. This is cycling, walking, running, of course, and skiing, Nordic skiing. You know, so I think those are the sports where we get a lot of impact, I think. And you can see the boom in running. Like Boston has about 30, 35,000 runners. New York City Marathon was just held, and they had, I think, 59,000. But this is true in every city around the world, the big cities, all over the world. This is a global sport. And I think you don't have to do the marathon. The marathon, I think, Mark, is a kind of a quest, but it's mm-hmm. it's a cool challenge, you know?
You just got to get out and keep moving. And speaking of which, I mentioned in the intro, Bill, that you still do run. How much and how often?
Yeah, I don't run every day. I think I probably run 4 or 5 days a week, maybe. I run 4 to 5 miles, 6 miles sometimes. I did the Cherry Blossom Half Marathon 2 years ago. I think it was 75. The half marathon feels like the marathon to me today. You know, it takes me about the same amount of time as it used to take me to run the whole marathon. But it was fun. I ran with my partner, Karen, and she started running when she was 49 years old. She was a breast cancer patient, and her doctor was a runner. And so, you know, in terms of recovery, and so she started running and everything. And I'm a cancer past patient too. I hit with prostate cancer when I was 60 years old. So I think, you know, we all get hit with something, though, but the deal is, how do we move ahead? And we can, you know, but I think our doctors are very important, you know, and I don't know, friends and family. You know, I run with some friends throughout, you know, probably once a week or something. They're older too.
And it's also, you know, when you talk about bouncing back from your prostate cancer and others bouncing back from whatever, I mean, we see it all the time. I mean, if I'm at a swimming meet and I see a guy with a scar down the middle of his chest and I know he's had open heart surgery, I don't care whether he's a good swimmer or not. I want to interview him. And what we have learned, and I know this helped you, Bill Rogers, is that people who stay active, you know, whether you're good at it or not, when you stay active, you, in fact, prehabilitate yourself. You prepare yourself for these challenges that we're all going to face, and it helps you bounce back. How much do you think your overall fitness and conditioning helped you, Bill, as you battle cancer?
You know, when I was first diagnosed, I was actually down in Barbados, and I ran a 10K race down there. Some of my buddies were down there. We were having fun. And then I got a call from my urologist, I guess, you've got cancer. You got to go in and have surgery and radiation, whatever. So I did that, you know, but I was scared, you know, because it's got this connotation that it can't be beaten. But we now know that through science and tremendous amount of research, we can beat most cancers. But yeah, it was a scary thing, but you forget about it after a while, you know, you just, because you get back to your life. I remember with a friend who had he had some surgery, hip surgery or something like that. And he was a competitive runner too, but he made a comeback. I believe that almost all of the time we can make a comeback, but now I'm running about 25 miles a week. When I was a young guy, you know, 25 years old, 30, 35, I was running about 125 miles a week. And all the pro marathoners do that. But Jeff Galloway, an American Olympian from Atlanta, Georgia, speaks of, and he has helped train about a quarter of a million or 300,000 people to run a marathon. People think they can't do it. You can, but you need a friend. You know, that's what it is. And so my first marathon, I dropped out. It was Boston. I didn't know how to pace myself. Today at races, they have pacers that will guide you.
You dropped out of your first Boston Marathon, then you win 3 out of 4 years in a row. You'll win the New York Marathon 4 years in a row. And you, the impact that you had back then, I know was inspirational, but it was also entertaining. You know, we all sat back and just marveled at what Bill Rogers was able to do. But it seems like in the position you are now, Bill, when you look back, you know, we always talk about the ripples of effect that we can have. When you look back, you know, maybe the greatest thing you did was not winning 4 New York marathons or not winning 3 Boston marathons, but inspiring generations worldwide, as you mentioned, to get off the couch and get out on the streets. You've got to be very proud. I hope you understand your place in inspiring the world to run and get healthy.
Thank you. You know, I was just being a runner, and it's a very simple sport, really. And at your teammates, your friends, we had a great coach, Coach Billy Squires, went to Notre Dame University and was a miler. But I think our sport is a sport where you do make friends. It's the kind of sport where you shake hands on the starting line and at the finish, sometimes during the race, you know, because you're on the same quest. It's like something out of the movies or something. It's a quest, you know, and I think and anyone can do it. Not anyone can be playing in the NBA or professional football or baseball. You know what I'm saying? But here in this kind of a sport, in these Olympic sports, you can get out there and you could beat the Olympians, perhaps, you know, and at least you're out there with your friends and your family. And I just love all parts of the sport, you know.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, you know, the impact. Seeing guys like you and Frank Shorter and the rest of them out there doing their thing, you know, inspired everybody to want to run. And it was the women who stepped up and on their own, not only started to run, but demanded the right to run. But they were inspired by guys like you, as we all were. But we've interviewed Catherine Switzer on this show a couple of times and have become friends with her. And of course, she's part of Boston Marathon history, as are you. Just amazing what you guys have done.
Well, I think, yeah, I've known Catherine for a long time. She was a marathoner before I was. And all of us guy marathoners wanted women to be part of the sport, but it was the World Athletics Organization that held women back. They thought women would be hurt and couldn't have children if they ran a marathon or something. It was a tremendous scientific backwardsness. But today, I think these kind of sports are really kind of cutting edge and helping people live healthier lives and live better and enjoy your life, you know, enjoy your life more. But the cool thing about the marathon, like I'm going to go to the Disney Marathon because I work with a group called Team Daniel, and they have a team there. My partner and I will run the half marathon there. You know, this is a group raising funds to deal with schizophrenia, a very tough disease. And today I think our sport may be the most successful sport. You know, running the marathon for someone you lost or someone who's fighting something really serious. So we can all do that. We can all step up, you know.
It's a great way to leave a legacy, you know, just to get involved to help others. And speaking of helping others, is the Bill Rogers Jingle Bell Run, is that still underway? You still doing that?
Absolutely. I love the Jingle Bell Run. And the Jingle Bell Run was started by my brother Charlie and our best friend, Jason Kehoe. And we all were runners in high school together. And then we all quit and everything, but later started up after we all moved to Boston and everything. We're from Newington, Connecticut. But the Jingle Bell Run is coming up on almost 50 years and everything. But I didn't want to do a race because I did so much racing in my life. I wanted to just celebrate what this means. Let's get out there with your friends and just celebrate. And we would run down to the Boston Commons and see all the lights and the trees. And so today, my brother Charlie and I, Charlie actually ran the race and I would jump in the race and we would run different places. But today there are Jingle Bell Runs all over the country and probably all over the world, you know. But it's just the other side of running. It's not, I didn't want everything to be competition. There's tons of competition, you know, but I wanted to have just some fun too. You know what I mean?
It's the power of community. I know exactly what you mean. It's, you know, when we not just surround ourselves with others who inspire us, but when we encourage others. And I think that's something Yes. we all need, especially as we get older. We need encouragement because, you know, we found, Bill, that it's easy to discourage an older adult, you know, because we're all a little bit afraid. We don't think we can do it. We are afraid to fail. We're afraid to be embarrassed. And all it takes is discouraging somebody a little bit and they're on the couch. But if you encourage them, if you let them know what you have just done for all of us, and thank you for that, that you don't have to win. You don't have to be a champ. You just have to get out there and have some fun. It'll do you a world of good.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I think your health, we don't really talk about health too much. I don't really think as a country. I think it's not valued enough. And how do you keep it? And so I salute what you're doing, Mark. And we need to, you know, our older people in our country, let's treat them really good, you know, with Medicare and Medicaid and make sure that they get good help and everything. I think we're improving in a lot of ways. And I think a lot of individuals are doing it themselves, or maybe they're learning more from people like you, Mark, online, you know, and it's just the way, like, women came in. Our sport was only half of its strength for a long time. But now the numbers, this is a global sport, and everyone can do something really cool.
That is road racing icon Bill Rogers. And coming up, we'll wrap up our interview as Rogers shares how an unexpected gift from Steve Prefontaine changed his life. And a bit later, a pep talk from the ambassador of swimming, 3-time Olympic gold medalist Rowdy Gaines. That's next on Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts.
In a soldier's stance, I aim my hand at the mongrel dogs you teach.
Welcome back to Growing Bolder as we continue our conversation with road racing icon Bill Rogers. We pick it up as I ask Bill a question that has nothing to do with running. So as someone that is obviously aging with passion and aging with purpose, take running out of it altogether, Bill Rogers. And you know, what have you learned about life in general? What's the takeaway? What's the moral of the story? What do you think is the most important thing that we all should be doing or thinking?
Well, there's that biblical quote, do unto others as you would have done unto you, something like that. You know, I'm not a formally religious person, but I think the way you live is kind of an expression of that, you know? And I don't know. I think competition's great, but so is camaraderie. you know? And I think that that's your angle, Mark. And I like that, you know, it's not just about defeating someone. I got caught up in the marathon. I ran the marathon for years. I did 60 marathons. But there's people who've done more, very durable. But I think the main thing is to find out what you love. Everyone's a little different.
We're talking with true running royalty, folks. An icon, a guy who has done it all and he's still doing it. And, you know, maybe having a greater impact today than he did 50 years ago when he won the first of three Boston marathons. Bill Rogers, of course, is his name. What about the Bill Rogers Running Center? Is that still a viable operation?
Well, the Bill Rogers Running Center is no longer a bricks and mortar store, but yes, you can reach me and my brother Charlie at our online store. And actually, I have a book I'm glad to sign for any of your guests or listeners. It's called Marathon Man, and it came out in 2013. But so that's what I do. I go to races. I love to meet runners because everyone's got the questions. They're wondering partly about their shoes, you know, because that's a very important part of your taking part or finding the shoes that really work for you, because we're all a little different and everything. But yeah, the store is still there.
Speaking of the Bill Rogers Running Center, I you know, I've snooped around on there a little bit. I was fascinated to see an old letter that was written to you by Steve Prefontaine back in the day. I mean, you know, a piece of history. What was it like to be, you know, part of that whole running movement back then? Because it was happening and there was just a handful of you that everybody was paying attention to.
Well, what happened was American Frank Shorter took the Olympic gold medal in Munich, Germany at the Olympics since 1972. Prefontaine also competed there and just missed medaling. But he ran this heroic from the front. I'm going to win. I'm going to try. Just give it a try, you know, but just missed. And he later died in a car crash. But just before he died, I was at World Cross Country Championships with Jeff Galloway and Frank Shorter. And I asked him, do you think you can get me some Nike shoes? And next thing you know, I got the shoes and a letter from Steve Prefontaine, and I won Boston in those shoes. And that changed my life. If you can win Boston, you know, suddenly you get invited to other marathons. And so I ran a race in Holland. And then I would run a race, you know, a global sport, start trying to compete with runners from around the world. And so it was like a journey. And Frank led the way for us, you know, and Pre did too. You know, at Disney Marathon, I was at the first Disney Marathon, like about 30 years ago, 35 years ago. And I still remember that. And it's so exciting to go to Disney World and be there for a running event. And I remember John Hughes was the organizer. And I thought, this is, running has made it now. We're at Disney World.
Give us a takeaway here. You're 78 years old now?
I'll be 78 December 23rd.
A happy birthday. What do you think about your future? Are you optimistic? Are you nervous? Are you scared? What's ahead for you?
I'm just a runner. You know, Mark, we're always winging it. We're just winging it, you know? And I think it's a good way to go. But I get nervous at the races now because almost everyone is faster than me. And so I got to be careful, you know, running with slower runners. But then you just go to the back of the group. Then you run your own pace. You run your race, you know. But that's what I love about running. It's all over the country. Yep. And every country, there are runners and there are athletes. Mark, are you a swimmer or what is your interest?
I am. I'm a competitive master's swimmer. I also ran in college and I came back and ran two races when I turned 60. I'm a hurdler, but I turned 75 next year, and I'm gonna start trying to run hurdles again to see if I've not yet lost that ability. I'm a sprinter. I'm the exact opposite of you. The shorter, the better.
You have fast twitch muscle fibers, and we should explain that usually you're born either with fast twitch muscle fibers, whereupon you might play football or basketball or be a sprinter like yourself, or a 100-meter swimmer or something. And then there's the slow twitch people like myself who are, you know, I don't know, doing long hikes or rowing long distances or something like that, you know. So I think we're all made for some sport, and it's just a matter of finding the one you love, you know.
Absolutely with that. And I have to tell you, as we wrap it up here, I love your answer to my question a moment ago. What's ahead for you? What are you thinking about the future? And the answer was, I'm a runner. And, you know, I think that gets right to it. I think that's the moral of the story in general for all of us. It's one step at a time. If you're a runner, it's one stride at a time. And, you know, we get caught up thinking too far down the road instead of just, you know, keeping on, keeping on. And Bill Rogers, we thank you for keeping on, keeping on. And thank you for your time today. Look forward to seeing you soon, and keep it up.
Thank you very much, Mark. See you on the roads.
As he approaches his 80s, Rogers continues to participate in and benefit from the running community that he helped create. All right, when we return, a final word from another icon. This is Growing Boulder.
Embrace the health and longevity movement with the Fountain of Youth monthly e-newsletter. Growing Boulder and the National Senior Games Association have teamed up to bring you the latest videos, podcasts, and articles on inspirational masters athletes and the many benefits of physical activity delivered right to your inbox. Just go to nsga.com/connect to sign up for free today. The Fountain of Youth, because if you want to keep moving, you have to keep moving.
Hi, I'm Rowdy Gaines, three-time Olympic gold medalist. I talk a lot about goal setting because to me it's really important. You have to know where you're going in order to get there. You need something to focus on or you'll get lost along the way. But don't become so focused on the destination that you forget to enjoy the journey, because that's what makes you who you are. How you treat others along the way, how you respond to setbacks, how you use your successes to build momentum. Here's something I've learned from my decades in competitive swimming. Those who don't enjoy the journey, the practices, the traveling, the time spent with teammates, are the ones who rarely, if ever, achieve their goals. But those who savor the process, those who realize that the journey is much more important than the destination, those are the ones who end up on the podium.
Thank you, Rowdy, and thank you for being part of our journey, because Growing Boulder is more than media, it's a movement, and we're all in this together. We're all trying to live with passion, purpose, and possibility, no matter our age or challenges. We'll see you next time.
The Growing Boulder Radio Show is a production of Growing Boulder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Boulder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, flowing high and mighty trapped. Countless fire and flaming road, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I, proud neath heated brow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Half-right prejudice leap before, ripped out screen. Lies that life is black and white.
Sure.